State, your the state's favorite semi-regular podcast. I'm your host, Andy Coons. Right over here to my left is Ben DeYoung. How you doing, Ben?
Doing okay. It's been one of those weeks in Michigan, especially as far as the weather goes. It's like, are you going to wake up to snow, to rain, to sleet?
Oh, yeah. It's 60 degrees outside right now.
I know. It's just... And then I think next week we have highs in the 10s. So if you're listening outside of Michigan, come to the state and visit us when it's summer. Just skip the winters because you just never know what you're going to get.
Did you know that Hawaii got snowfall?
What?
Yeah.
That, can you imagine their faces? Like, the world's ending. I mean... Is this about volcanic dust? Like, what's going on here?
They threw a virgin into the wrong volcano. maybe she wasn't a virgin. I don't know. Anyway.
Maybe that's the problem, yeah.
Well, to the listeners out there, heck of a year already. Man, the last 3 weeks have been insane. Apologies for not, you know, keeping up our regular once a week schedule, but I mean, if you've been with us as long, or if you've been with us this long, you know that those are completely empty words. We've never been great at doing it once a week, but to those who are listening, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. It's good to be back recording. You know, got all the holidays behind us, and now we can actually focus on you know, the important stuff like podcasting. And Venezuela, also really important. So if you've been living under a rock for the last, I don't know, when did it happen? 2 weeks ago?
Well, I mean, I think it's been, the blockade started almost, 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the attack and kidnapping was it just earlier this week?
Was it?
I think it might have been like Monday or something like that.
Was it really?
Oh, no, it was on, I think, Friday last week. Because it was over the weekend. Because I was like,
okay, yeah,
what is this going to do to the stock market?
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely insane. I'm starting to think, and correct me if I'm wrong, correct me if I'm over my skis. I don't think Trump is as anti-war as he campaigned to be. I know that a lot of Venezuelans do not like Maduro. I understand that from their perspective, like, this might be a good thing. There are a lot of Venezuelans that are cheering the fact that we took out Maduro. But I'm not Venezuelan, and there were still 40 people, you know, like 40 civilians that were killed during this operation. And it's like, you know, a lot of people have been sort of wagging their finger at the anti-war crowd, being like, see, the Venezuelans love that this happened, and like, this is all part of a coup. It was a massive success, but like, we're already seeing sort of the dominoes fall with China and with Russia. Like, they're like, I think we've really kind of shot ourselves in the foot and taken several steps towards a larger conflict. You know, I don't know all the ins and outs of it. I don't want to speak out of turn or anything, but I know that China and Russia both have been sort of making vague threats about us seizing oil tankers, you know? And you have to look at the big picture here. It's like, listen, we just seized a large resource from some of our foreign adversaries, you know? This was not a, like, it's bigger than how happy the Venezuelans are right now. We also have to think about how pissed off China and Russia are, you know, and where that puts us on the world stage. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think there was definitely an inside, I mean, I don't know if this is their vice president kind of worked with the Trump administration to make this happen, but you don't land a whole bunch of helicopters on a foreign military base and take no fire unless this was set up or allowed to happen. So
I definitely think from the Venezuelan government, I definitely think this was a coup. You know, like I think this was an inside job. A lot of people within the Venezuelan government didn't like Maduro, and like Maduro wasn't a good guy. You know, he was, I think he took over the country from Che Guevara. Chavez, Hugo Chavez.
Hugo Chavez. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those brown socialists. I don't know. It's not we love the state without a little bit of casual racism thrown in there. Anyway, it was taken over from Chavez or Guevara, or I don't know all the history, but and they ran that country into the dirt, you know. So I know I'm always like a silver lining person, and it's like from the perspective of the Venezuelans, like I'm like, all right, like this is. It's kind of a good thing for them, you know.
What do you think about the argument from a libertarian perspective? Because I saw some back and forth on X. I'm blanking on a couple of their names, but they were talking about the fact that there was business contracts for some of these oil.
Jeremy Kaufman was making that point.
Yeah, Kaufman, yeah, was saying, and then the state broke those contracts, and so this was a way to restore. Like a legal basis of legal contracts, and is it the state's right to break private citizen contracts? I guess I never thought of it from that perspective, but like, is national sovereignty, does that trump contract law?
Right.
And I wondered what you thought about that.
You know, I'm not sure, because I'm much more basic on that, because, you know, as soon as a foreign country's involved, that's when I'm like, no, we shouldn't be doing anything, you know, like, especially with our military in a foreign country, like pulling off black ops operations, you know, in foreign countries, that's what.
Are you using our military to enforce contract law? Like, that's using our military for private business.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's J.D. Vance's argument, too.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not as well versed in sort of this aspect of it. Using the military to enforce, private contracts seems like such an overreaction, you know?
And a very dangerous, slippery slope, because you open the door to that, you basically can use the military for anything. And then it's not the
U.S. military. You can use the military for anything. Well, we just gave permission to every other country to use their military for private contracts, you know? And then, like, what's to stop anybody, the United States included, to just consider anything a private contract, you know? The U.S. government is not above. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, Tucker Carlson just had a great podcast with Megyn Kelly. I don't know if you've seen it, but
I did. Yeah, that was a great episode.
His intro, when he was like, well, we can't point the finger at anybody now, because once we are basically like, without even a fake pretense, we're just like, we're going in and we're stealing their resources.
And well, the point that he made that I really particularly liked is he was like, I mean, I didn't like it, but he made a really good point. And he's like, you know, the veil's off now. We are an empire, and we just declared it to the whole world. We are an empire. You know?
Yeah. He put his finger right on everything that I was thinking and feeling. It was just one of those episodes where I'm like, holy crap. Like a figure like Tucker Carlson is calling all this out. Like it was crazy. I mean, it was one of the best, I think, podcasts I've watched in a long time, just because it was so on the nose.
Yeah.
And so relevant. And I think, you know, it was interesting to have him approach it, because I think from my perspective, and probably a lot of libertarian perspectives, it's the veil's off. I mean, we've always known it's the U.S. empire, but now it's, you can't even question that.
Right.
And that upsets people. And from Tucker's perspective, he's like, well, it is what it is. Well, how are we going to live with it? How are we going to cope with it? How are we going to make the best out of the situation that we're in as far as empire?
Yeah.
And it was an interesting, different kind of perspective of looking at it from, well, here we are. How are we going to make the best of it as opposed to burn it down? And so I'm still kind of like a caught in between, because we know how empires end. They always end in either war or economic disasters, more often than it's usually war.
And it's almost always they are brought down from within. Almost always. Sure.
And we can see that. Like every major city, you walk around, it looks like a third world country.
Mm-hmm.
Between the drugs and the crumbling infrastructure. I mean, Lansing, like, you know, there are potholes that I'm surprised don't swallow half cars, because they're it's disgusting. And it's just we all know how the story ends. But it's interesting to look at it from a, well, how do we make the best of the situation we're in, is a little bit more, I think, looking at it as from a white pill perspective, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, wow, we're even having to have this discussion. I mean, it's good that it's being discussed, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where it leads. I mean, Trump was threatening Cuba. I mean, that's Marco Rubio, little Rubio's wet dream is to be the, you know, dictator of Venezuela or Cuba, because that's where he came from. And then they were threatening Colombia. And it's just like, you know, it's Trump's bully. I mean, that's what he is. He's just a giant bully. And it's great when he's bullying, you know, ridiculous leftists. But now he's trying to bully the world. And it's like, dude, this doesn't end well.
I think there was a video I saw. I don't remember who it was from. I don't remember who made the point. It might have even been on Timcast, but the whole annexing Canada thing, which I don't think Trump was 100% joking about. I think he was kind of serious about that. And then
there's
also
I think there's a little truth in every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah. And then also, like, we're buying Greenland, you know, and then what he's doing with South America. I think what Trump is trying to do is I think he is basically taking our half of the world, you know, North America, Central America, and South America, and trying to make that some kind of united front, you know, because the Strauss and one other guy, I don't remember the other guy's name, but basically the cycles that Western civilization goes through is like every 85 years, there's this massive conflict, you know? And like we had the Civil War and then World War II. And like, we're right up to the point where we're going to see another massive conflict, you know? And so I think there are things going on that, I think we're ramping up for a massive war with China and Russia.
Potential. And when the fact that Trump just demanded an increase in the Pentagon budget from 1 trillion to 1.5.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just bananas. Like 2 years ago, it was 800 billion. So we've almost doubled it.
Doubled it. And it's like we're going from a $1 trillion military budget. That's an increase of 50%. You know, a 50% increase in the military budget. You know, that like I think we're staring down the barrel of the gun. I mean, we all know that we've been, you know, on the doorstep of World War III for a while, you know. But I think we're really getting to the point where it's like, no, this is going to happen. The pressure can't just keep building over, you know, continuously. And we're going to see a real hot conflict between China and Russia, you know,
and us.
That's what's terrifying. Well, yeah. Like us versus China and Russia concurrently, you know? And so I think that's why he wants Greenland. That's why he wants Canada. And I think this whole thing with Venezuela, him saying like, we're going to run the government till we can find somebody. It's like, all right, buddy, you know, like that means we're going to indefinitely seize control of Venezuela. And I think it's not going to stop at Venezuela. I think we're going to seize control of South America, you know, and And I think it's going to come down to a hot conflict, and we can only pray that cooler heads prevail and it doesn't turn nuclear. You know,
what do you mean if we do a hot conflict? I'm just kind of like planning it out, because we have, I mean, our numbers for military enlistment numbers have been just kind of tanking over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they would risk like instituting a draft again and just grabbing people out of their homes? Like, what would that do to, I mean, I think there would be a huge outrage from all of the left.
Yeah.
A good portion of the right, riots in the street. Or how do you think this plays out?
I think there are some young men who will welcome the draft. Gen Z is way more nationalistic than millennials are, you know, and a lot of millennials are aging out of the draft age. You know, I'm turning 37 this year. They're not taking me. And also I'm a huge fat guy, you know, they're not taking me, you know, but like they've got a target on my kids, you know. My oldest is 15, you know, he's turning 16 later this year, you know, and by the time he turns 18, I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to have to sign up for the draft. And so this is what I think. I think the draft will be utilized. And I think that, there is going to be huge backlash, but then that causes a two front war with the United States, because they're going to be fighting China and Russia. And then also they're going to have to fight themselves, you know, because I can tell you, like, and this is where, you know, I drop the whole Christian nationalist thing and I go right back to being a hardcore libertarian. And I'm like, if some G-man comes to my front door and says, "We are taking your son so he can fight on the front lines," I will shoot that guy in the face, you know? So, and I'm not the only person who feels that way, who has that sentiment. You know, we have the benefit of hindsight, looking at what happened to young men during Vietnam, what happened to young men during World War I and World War II, young men who were drafted, you know, who went and were tossed into a meat grinder and came home shells of their former selves. I'm sorry. I'll see myself in prison for murdering some capital official before I allow my son to do that, you know.
And I think that's going to be pretty widespread.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you now have a major internal conflict and a major external conflict. There's no way the United, even if we have control of all North, Central, and South America, there's no way the United States can fight those two fronts, you know, because there's going to, for the internal conflict, it's going to cause just in the United States, Canada, there are a lot of Canadians who love being Canadian that do not want the United States to control Canada. They're going to put up a fight. There's Mexicans who love Mexico, you know, who are going to put up a fight. And that is true for every single South American country. So it's like, there's so many battles that the United States is going to have to wage that it's not conceivable that we survive this war if we have to issue the draft. But I don't think that I don't think there's a way to enter this conflict without having to use the draft.
Well, I'm almost kind of looking at, like, towards, you know, end stage empire in Rome. They actually, wasn't it, they tried to bring in a lot of the non-citizens to say, fight in the military and we'll give you Roman citizenship. And then,
yeah,
those ended up turning on Rome. And
mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they would like offer all of the illegal immigrants serve 2 years or 4 years in the military, get U.S. citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be another way to potentially bolster their ranks.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah, that's definitely a possibility. But even that, I could see that sparking a major civil war, in, you know, within the continental United States. Because another thing that Gen Z is way more than millennials. I could have picked a better way to structure that sentence. That was garbage. Gen Z is also way, way more racist than millennials, you know, and they're open about it and they're completely comfortable with it, you know, and they don't have the sort of social taboo weight that millennials and Gen X and, you know, boomers were kind of had drilled in their heads since childhood, you know,
the PC culture.
Exactly. The PC culture. And, you know, like they just don't care, you know? And I mean, the reason for that is, you know, they were told since childhood, like, listen, you treat everybody equally and you get treated, you know, like the golden rule, treat others how you want to be treated, you know? And they did that and they still saw that, like, oh, you know, white people are kind of treated like garbage, you know, and made to be the butt of the joke. And so Gen Z just has outright, you know, I'm speaking in broad terms with Gen Z, but they've just outright rejected that, you know, it doesn't register with them like it does with us. And so, bringing in a whole bunch of foreign people to fight in our military in order to gain citizenship, well, the people that are already here are not going to be too happy about it, you know? And so it's just, it's throwing fuel on a fire that's already there, you know? Yeah. We're screwed.
What do you think? What do you think? What do you think lights that match? Do you think? Because it's pretty clear we're going to go after Iran again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's going to be what kind of sets this? As a you know,
I'm not sure. I don't think that sparks the big conflict. You know, I've always thought it was going to have something to do with Taiwan and the chips that they make. And, you know, I mean, we almost oppose our own one China policy, you know? So I've always thought it would have something to do with that. And that's when China would retaliate, but you know, it could be, it's not like Iran is an isolated island, you know, like they have allies too. And I'm pretty sure isn't Iran and Russia allied?
Yeah, Iran is part of the BRICS nations, and I can't remember if they have a military pact with Russia. I thought they had signed something with Russia about a mutual defense package, but I don't know if that entails them. That means that if somebody starts bombing them, Russia retaliates. So maybe it's just military aid to Iran for missiles and defense systems. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. Was it John Bolton that tweeted about the protests in Tel Aviv, not Tel Aviv, but in what's the capital of Iran?
Jacksonville.
Blanking on it. Yeah. he said that, and thanks to all the people protesting and thanks to every Mossad agent who's standing next to them.
Wait, was that John Bolton or was that Lindsey Graham?
No, it wasn't John Bolton. It was the previous Secretary of War. He's the heavy guy that went on Ozempic and now he looks like a pinhead. I think everybody that's listening will know who I'm talking about. But yeah, he tweeted that. And so that's, you know, you see all those videos of, you know, the protests in Iran. Is it Iran or Iran?
It's either
I
or.
I always second guess myself.
You know, it's like some people say Oregon, some people will say Oregon, some people say Oregon, you know?
Yeah, that's true. So anyhow, I mean, they're clearly not natural protests. And then Trump goes, if any protesters die, we're going to kill everyone. And it's it still amazes me that there are Trump loyalists out there because the guy just is an idiot. People like love to say that he's like a brilliant strategist and marketing person. But like, if your goal is to save the Iranians from being killed by their government, and the way you do that is to bomb them. And people like, oh, that makes sense. That's 4D chess. And you're just like, you just have to shake your head and go, what the, like,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, I do love it in the fact that it shows how much government is just stupid people theater.
Yeah.
And I think more and more people are waking up to it because Trump is so bad at it. And so many people that he's surrounded, like those interviews with Cash Patel and Dan Bongino, they're just like, yeah, Epstein definitely killed themselves. You know, like mm-hmm. they're so bad at their jobs and their job mm-hmm. is to lie. They're supposed yeah. to be good liars and they suck at it. And
did you hear that Dan Bongino is going back to his podcast and he goes, I'm going after black pillars and grifters.
Yeah, anybody who's opposed to the Trump administration, I'm blocking you on X.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. Speaking of
everybody.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I don't even have a big X account, and I got blocked because I posted a couple memes on his comments. And it's you... like, he must have an army of blockers because pretty soon he'll have more people blocked than he'll have followers.
I see. I don't want to go that route. I don't think that he's got an army of blockers. I think it's just him. He saw something that you said, dude, you got blocked by the sitting, what is his exact job title?
The deputy director of the FBI.
Yeah, the deputy director of the FBI, soon to be former deputy director of the FBI, blocked your boy Ben DeYoung. So the listeners, to the viewers out there, like, tell your friends, you know, tell your friends about this show. I'd be like, yeah, I listen to this show. Well, the guys got blocked by the soon to be former deputy director of the FBI, you know, just talk us up, please help us out.
that's almost famous right there.
Mm-hmm. I think Phil Labonte, which is the guy I couldn't think of earlier, but, Phil Labonte has me blocked on X. And that was, that's a little something that I put up on my mantle, you know? So that's what I enjoy. There's one other famous guy that has me blocked, and I don't remember who it is. It's like Keith Olbermann or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, that's awesome. I need to get Cat Turd and Randy Fine. Those are my two next.
Yeah. I used to follow Destiny, and then I had to block him, especially after Charlie Kirk was killed, because I was just like, he was saying some horrible things.
He's like one of the biggest pieces of shit. I mean,
yeah, just and like, ridiculous. I used to think that he was like a good debater, and so I would check him out, and be like, you know, I do want to hear from the other side. You know, I don't want to just be isolated to, you know, just my side of the talking points. But then somebody, there was somebody who compared him. They were like, he's just a progressive Ben Shapiro. He's the Ben Shapiro of the left. And I was like, oh yeah, you know what? You're right. Because he does use a lot of word salad and not say anything. He doesn't say anything of substance. And, you know, then I started like, you know, the debates that he does, especially whenever he debates Andrew Wilson, those are fun.
Yeah, Andrew doesn't hold anything back.
Yeah, man, he's a great guy to watch debate, you know, and his debate with Dave Smith really kind of, you know, put things into perspective for me for libertarianism, which
after the first 45 minutes or 30 minutes, because that was rough.
Oh, yeah, that was a rough one anyway. But yeah, I had to block Destiny. I had to block Laura Loomer. Because it's just everything I saw Laura Loomer say, it was just like, dude, that's so fake, like so transparently fake.
Outright lies,
you know. But and all of that just got way worse after Charlie Kirk was killed. You know, I saw every person who I'd seen call Charlie, Laura Loomer called him an anti-Semite, you know. And then he was killed. And then she's like, oh, my best friend, Charlie Kirk, was killed. And I was just like, that's disgusting. That is absolute trash, you know? So blocked her. I don't know. A lot of those super mega Zionists I had to block. But
yeah.
Anyway.
I mean,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, talking about Charlie Kirk, what a divisive topic. I mean, it's been crazy to see the reaction is, I think, especially with Candace. I mean, you had Tim Pool go all Beanie Ben and started screaming and ranting and like calling her the C word and just completely unhinged. He looked like a psychotic Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And this, you know, just like what in the world? And then Alex Jones went nuts. I mean, he is nuts, but he went nuts on Candace.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been crazy to see. I don't know if it's just maybe their funding sources are telling them you need to lay down the law and go after Candace or we're cutting funding.
Right.
Or they're just uber jealous that, I mean, she's getting 2 to 3 million views on every episode and their viewership is dying. Tim Pool saying it's about the midterms is like the dumbest excuse. Yeah. To say I have to, you know, trash this woman. You get the wildlife behind you. Right. So right. I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, they talk about there's a fracture on the right and it's around the Charlie Kirk stuff. I think it's around Israel, but
yeah, I absolutely think it's about Israel. And I think that you know, what you mentioned earlier, like, you know, there might be some jealousy of Candace. I don't think it's that. I think it is their investors, the people who are funding them are saying, you need to shut this woman down, you know? And why is that? Well, she is a prominent not anti-Israel, but she's a prominent critic of the United States relationship with Israel. She's a prominent critic of the genocide in Gaza, you know, and the people who are backing Tim Pool and Alex Jones, because, you know, that money can't be 100% organic. I'm totally speculating. It could all be 100% grassroots. Who knows? I don't. But I think they've been in the game long enough where being jealous is just not a thing, you know, not enough for them. Yeah. Yeah. Not enough, you know, cause like, listen, there's other podcasts out there that started after we did, you know, that are bigger than we are. And it's like, I don't care. Podcasting is something where it's not competitive like that, you know, because this isn't broadcast TV. We're not sitting here being like, oh, someone's going to take our slot. You know, no podcast has a slot, you know? And so, yeah, I don't think it's jealousy. I think it's whoever's paying the bills. You know what? Another thing with TimCast, he has to spend a absurd amount of money on security, you know, allegedly. And if that's the case, then there's gotta be somebody who's backing him that's keeping his company afloat. It's not all just not only that, coffee. I mean,
he built a complete compound, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he's got a lot of bills that are all tied to his brand.
Mm-hmm.
So either, I mean, yeah, viewership tanks and he's probably getting less ad revenue and probably less checks from YouTube. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that there is a financial penalty there. But to your point, he has to also have that supplemented with some financial backers.
Mm-hmm. There's also something going back to Candace Owens, but like there, so I watch, our friend of the show, Clint Russell. I watch him quite a bit, and there was a point that he brought up about Candace and Dave Smith actually brought up this same point where it's like, it's not always about the accusation that Candace throws out. It's the accusation that Candace throws out. And then the response to that accusation that kind of tells the more important story, you know, because there were things that she was saying about texts with Charlie Kirk and that, and I think that's when Josh Hammer revealed that there were those weird texts between Josh Hammer and Charlie Kirk, or I don't know, Charlie was I don't know exactly what the text messages were, but like that's something that has kept me from getting on the Candace Owens is crazy train, is because I'm like, you know what? I think that she throws a lot of things against the wall, and I think she's very careful with the words that she chooses, because I think she wants there to be some plausible deniability. I think that she wants to be able to sort of throw this thing out there, speculate this thing. And then if somebody calls her on it, she'd be like, no, I didn't say that's what happened. I'm just exploring this angle or something like that, you know?
It's being an investigative reporter. I mean, you just chase down leads. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, most times you do that behind the scenes and you only mm-hmm. put on the screen which leads pan out.
Well,
but I think what she's doing is she's throwing everything at the wall with full visibility across the board with all of her listeners. So that way her listeners, because there's a lot of them, like Mel on X, Village Crazy Lady. She does a lot of investigation. She'll take some of the crumbs maybe that Candace has discussed mm-hmm. and then she'll chase down a lead. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of Candace's, what she's doing is she's kind of using, and she's even said this, it takes a village. It takes a lot of people. She's one, you know, a small crew. They yeah. can't chase down every lead. So she's kind of throwing everything out there and mm-hmm. letting everybody else. And there's been some that have kind of, I think, debunked some of her stuff, and maybe not debunked, but, you know, cast some doubt on it.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's what she's looking for. But to just attack her when she goes off on down a rabbit hole that people think is, you know, inappropriate. Well, mm-hmm. show, you know, prove her that it was wrong or that she was off base. And I think she might, you know, I think she's decent enough of a human being to go, you know what, you're right. That was a dead end, and we can close the chapter on that.
Well, another thing is, like, as soon as I understand the optics of it, but like as soon as Charlie was assassinated, Erica Kirk was immediately turned into like this sacred cow, you know. But man, you cannot deny her behavior ever since her husband was murdered, all right, has been strange. You know, it has been like, okay, I worked in geriatric care, you know. I was a direct care provider for 4 years, and then I worked in like durable medical equipment and was in nursing homes every day of the week for the next 5 years, 5 or 6 years. So I put in a decade in that industry taking care of the elderly. And let me tell you, everybody grieves differently. You know, it's hard to say that there is a wrong way to grieve. You know, there's unhealthy ways, but it's hard to say that there's a right way and a wrong way to like mourn somebody's passing. The healthy thing to do is to mourn and to grieve, you know. But like, you know, I think that Erica was believable, in the very beginning. But I got to tell you, the first red flag that I heard is when she was like, you know, my kids think he's on like this extended road trip. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Your kids don't know their dad's dead, you know? And I'm sorry, his kids were not infants. You know, I think he had like a 4 or 5 year old, you know. It's like, you can't just sit there and be like, your dad's on vacation or whatever, and he's actually dead. That I thought was a huge, huge red flag.
I think the first red flag that I saw was the video that she took of her touching the corpse at the funeral, and she put it on social media.
Yep, that like was her weird.
Final goodbye to Charlie, and she was stroking his arm, and I was like, "What are you? What? I mean,
you know, yes, that was weird. I could also see that being a very corporate turning point thing. Like their social media team is like, you know, during the funeral, you do you, but we're going to get some pictures and videos, just let everybody know that you're processing or whatever. I could also see it being something like that, but still at the very least, it was not in good taste, you know.
Or like the tent that Charlie was killed, and so they put that up at Amfest so people could take pictures and selfies in the tent. Mm-hmm. I was just like, you gotta be, you're trying to make money off of murder. That is bananas.
Yeah.
Exploiting it.
Yeah. Well, with Erica becoming this sacred cow, like the thing that I kind of had in my mind after it happened is like, listen, with something like this, something as high profile as this, like every single stone has to be turned over. You know, there should not be any stones that were like, no, don't look at that one, 'cause it might be disrespectful or hurt somebody's feelings. It's like, no, turn that stone over. Let's see what's under it. And I was like, everything has to be looked at. Even Erica Kirk, even Turning Point, especially Israel, because he was like, his support for Israel was wavering near the end, or, you know, he was under an immense amount of pressure to get it. Okay. This is my sort of tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. I absolutely think that Israel had something to do with it. You know, like
they had the most to gain from his death.
Well, okay. Not yes, but no, because this is what I think it was. I think they were looking at the writing on the walls. All right. Charlie was struggling to convince the Turning Point fans and followers of, you know, Israel being this, our greatest ally. You know, he was struggling keeping that Israeli or that support for Israel. You know, tons of people in the Turning Point crowd were looking at the genocide happening in Gaza and being like, what, you know? And so then it's like, listen, Charlie Kirk, who tried to be the biggest cheerleader for Israel, was losing support. And so I think what they were trying to do is get the focus switched from Israel to Trantifa, you know, the Troon Brigade, all the trans activists and extremists and stuff like that. I think they were trying to get the focus shifted back on them because they were tired of hearing people come up to that microphone and ask about Israel, you know? And so they're like, hey, go back to like red pilling people on trannies, you know, go back to red pilling people on like the 19th Amendment or something like that. Go back to talking about race, go back to talking about all these things except for Israel. But they see that tide turning. And so they're like, well, Charlie's not doing it for us. You know, I think that was their way to try to course correct. But here's the thing. It was too late because as soon as he died, people were immediately like, okay, did Israel have something to do with this?
What, it even didn't help before Netanyahu came right out and said, it wasn't us. It's like the day after. And it's like, whoa, why would you have to say that?
Yeah. It's a really weird thing to lead with. All right. I've got a story to tie in with this. There was a guy that I used to work with, and this is actually the story that got, this is old Andy, used to be a lefty, you know, this is the story that got me to be pro gun. All right. So there's this guy that I worked with who's like mentally unstable. And, you know, I tried to be friends with him 'cause I was training him, you know, and well, one day he calls me and I knew that he was like a big gun guy. He was in the Marines or in the Army. He's in the military. And he had this head injury, you know, and so he was discharged. So he told me about all these guns that he had and told me he had an AK-47 with a bump stock. And this was after the bump stock ban, you know? So one day he texts me and he's like, hey man, I got a favor to ask. And I was like, yeah, what's up? And he goes, hey, you know, my AK-47, could you hold it for me for a few days? And I was like, I don't know about that. I was like, I've got little kids. They're pretty curious. And he goes, don't worry. It's not hot. Meaning it's not, he hasn't loaded, killed anybody with it.
Oh,
I was like, that is a weird thing to lead with. Don't worry. I haven't killed anybody. And so I was like, No, I'm sorry. I can't do that. I don't have a gun safe. I don't have any place to put it where it's secure. And then he got all mad at me. He started calling me all these names and said that I stabbed him in the back. And like he went from making it sound like somebody was after him to making it sound like the cops were after him to making it sound like he was going to kill himself. You know, all these erratic things. And I was looking at these text messages and I'm like, this is really disturbing. And so I called the cops and I was like, hey, I've got this buddy. He's acting really weird. Can you go check on him? And they're like, okay. And I was like, the cops are like, does he have any guns in his house? And I, listen, like, as a libertarian, Christian nationalist, whatever the heck I am now, I am disgusted. I told the cops about all of his guns. All right. Now, in retrospect. But at the time, I was like, well, I don't want to send a cop there and get his face blown off. So I was like, yeah, he's got a ton of guns. He's also has an AK-47 with a bump stock. Greatest sin I've ever committed in libertarian politics. I told the cops about the bump stock. So cops get there, they check on him. He was fine. Well, then he texted me and he was like, you just effed up big time, you know? And so I was like terrified because this guy was unhinged, you know? And so I packed up my family. I left my apartment. He knew where I lived, you know? And I called the cops again. I was like, listen, I just got this other text message about this thing. Here's the whole story. Here's everything that's going on. Like, here's what you need to know. And the cops are like, what do you want us to do? I was like, I don't know. Go arrest. I don't know. You're the cops. You figure it out. I'm calling you because I don't know what to do. And
they're like, get a gun.
Well, they were just like, listen, we can go talk to him again, but that's just going to piss him off even more. And I was like, listen, I don't know. I'm in a hotel right now. Like, which the company I worked for at the time, they put us up in that hotel because I showed them the text messages. And the company that I worked for were like, yeah, that's not good. You know, they knew that he was crazy. And well, anyway, I was sitting there and I was like, if we go home and he shows up, there's nothing I can do. If I call the cops, they're going to be 15 minutes away, but it's going to take him 15 seconds to kick our door in and kill us. And I remember looking at my wife and I was like, I'm buying a gun, you know? And it was like, it wasn't much longer after that where I got my first gun, you know? And immediately everything became clear. Every gun nut that I argued with on the internet, every gun enthusiast that I looked at as just an uneducated redneck or whatever, all of that made sense all of a sudden. I was like, oh, I get it. These are so I can protect my family because there is nothing faster than pulling out your own gun to protect yourself and your family, you know? And I remember the phrase, you know, when every minute or when every second counts, the police are minutes away, you know?
That's a good phrase, yeah.
Or pulling the trigger is faster than dialing 911. All these sort of bumper sticker phrases that I heard from gun people, I was just like, oh, I get it now. I totally get it now, you know? And now I want every gun known to man, you know? So, anyway. I forgot how that related to, listen, I'm sorry, ADHD, whatever you want to call it. I forgot how this tied back in with Charlie Kirk. But anyway, that's how I became a gun guy.
Yeah, I mean, to go kind of go back to Kirk, it'll be interesting to see how things, did they, because I thought at one point they were going to allow cameras into the trial, into the courtroom. The J6 bomber, like they got that autistic black kid, which is clearly a BS patsy. I'm not even a patsy. I think he's just being set up. But if they're going to take these cases to trials, and then they're clearly full of holes, I don't know how you're going to convict either one of them, considering the evidence that, you know, that we know of. Mm. I just have the sneaking suspicion that they're both going to end up committing, you know what, in prison, and we never hear from him again.
Yeah.
Because I just don't know. I mean, I don't know in a just court of law how either one of these cases are going to be able to be an open and shut case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, do you think it's how is that going to play out?
I feel like no matter what happens with these cases, the public at large is not going to be satisfied, you know? And,
yeah,
and
the trust in the government is, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, Tyler Robinson might be the guy who pulled the trigger, and it might have been an isolated thing, and it might have been, you know, Trantifa or whatever. It might have been that. The official narrative might be correct. You know, that is an absolute possibility. But the fact is that I am not alone. I'm not even remotely alone in my first gut reaction being, that's the official narrative. I don't buy it. You know, I don't buy it on principle. You know, because we have been lied to over and over and over and over and over again. You know,
well, even like the most recent is the Butler shooting of, you know, attempted, you know, killing of Trump.
Yeah, none of that makes sense.
None of that makes any sense either.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, another thing that really frustrates me about Trump is I was like, man, where's your balls, man? Like, somebody tried to kill you, you know, somebody tried to kill you in front of your fans. Your fans got shot and killed, and you got this magically healing wound on your ear. You know, your head could have been blown clean off, but it wasn't. Some firefighter, some, you know, like a genuine like hero got shot in the chest and killed. You don't want to know what's going on.
I have a sneaking suspicion he knows exactly, and that's why he's not chasing it, because either that was a warning shot, it was something to either keep him in line, or it was a stunt, because I can't remember which podcast I was listening, or I think it was Theo Von, when Dave Smith was on, and they showed a behind the scene picture of the flag being lowered into the shot immediately after the shot happened. Mm-hmm. They lowered the flag. They ushered in the photographers to take pictures, mm-hmm. and they set up that picture.
Yeah.
And they did it within seconds after the shots were fired, which mm-hmm. is, you would think that everybody would be pushed away to keep people safe.
Yeah.
If it was an unknown active shooter, you don't bring people as, you know, right into the fray.
Like, yeah.
So, I mean, there's just so many absolute questions that are just like, this, none of this makes any sense.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
I think, like, there's a lot of people on the right that, you know, even going back to Tucker, is they're upset, or they're afraid of the fact that there is no longer any trust in government institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I it is kind of a catch 22, because I think everybody should be skeptical of government institutions. That's how we keep them in check, is we know it's us versus them. And we have to, you know, kind of healthy distrust is important. But if that goes too far, then there's just going to be absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Because when law and order breaks down, that's where I get nervous about the term anarchy,
mm-hmm.
where there is no respect for kind of law and order outside of what I've agreed to.
Yeah.
Because you kind of, to have civil discourse and civility, you know, the kind of the group has to agree to certain set of rules. And if you say, well, I never pledged, you know, I'm like, I'm exempt, as a lot of anarchists kind of believe that they, you know, it's whatever I want to do, or whatever I think is best, or whatever I've, you know, put my signature to. That's really all that I have to abide by.
Mm-hmm.
Like, society breaks down pretty quick.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it goes pretty quickly into like a might makes right type of environment, you know, which even your most hardcore anarchists don't want that, you know, they don't want a might makes right kind of thing. But it's like, I feel like all the chess pieces are in place right now on the board with the lowest trust in government institutions that we've ever seen in the history of our country. Plus, you have a generation of young men that are, you know, 10 times more nationalistic than any previous generation going back 80 years, you know, and a white population that is starting to wake up to the lies that they've been told about themselves, about others, you know, and this sort of new American dream of, you know, we don't see race, but you have to see race in these certain situations. And, you know, white people have to feel guilty for slavery and for Jim Crow and for all these things. And white people starting to be like, nah, that I'm not going to do that. You know, just internal tensions within the country boiling. And then you have tensions on the world stage boiling too, you know, and both of these things are headed towards like this sort of critical mass. And I think what's really scary is it looks like these things are going to hit critical mass at the same time, you know, or relatively close to each other. And, you know, that's where we have,
one can spark the other.
One can spark the other. Absolutely. You know? So I don't know. It's kind of hard to find a white pill in all of this. You know, I guess the white pill for me is, you know, I don't live near DC. I don't live near New York. I don't live near any big cities that are really big players on the American stage. You know, I live in the Midwest in a small town, and, you know, nobody's going to be nuking us anytime soon. But still, it's like, I don't know. Scary times are coming, you know?
Yeah. I think my white pill is just the fact that people are waking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a catch. It's a white pill and a black pill, I guess, because of what could happen after a large majority does wake up to, and gets, I think so many Americans still just have their head in the sand. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get frustrating, you know, whether it's talking to leftists or, you know, mega still people on the Trump train going, he's my guy, is, you know, they either, and most of them are either just, that's all they do is watch Fox. And so they just don't understand what's going on. You know, they're just eating propaganda. Same with the left. They're just watching, you know, CNN and MSNBC. And so they're only getting one side of the story. And, you know, it's very curated when it comes to anything on, you know, legacy media. But I think still more and more, I'm seeing more and more of them going, yeah, you make a good, I mean, it isn't nearly the conversations that I have, it's not nearly an unwillingness to get their head out of the sand like it was for a while. Now I'm starting to get a little bit more like, yeah, you make a good point. Like some of the breaks in the armor, I think, of ideology is happening. And I think that's good. I think people need to understand it's not left versus right. It's us versus them.
Yeah.
And I think to your point about Gen Z, their eyes are wide open to that fact. Mm-hmm.
So, and I know this is kind of a loaded question, a lot of stuff to unpack, but, let's make this the last question. So first of all, do you think it's possible? Do you think it's possible that people in DC will start to call for, maybe not using the words exactly overthrow, but like, do you think that people in DC are going to start entertaining the idea of like, hey, maybe we should, start floating the idea of like the powers that be, the people that are in charge right now, are barreling us towards a very, very dangerous and deadly situation that's going to get a lot of people killed or bring open war to our shores. Do you think that that's a possibility? And if so, how far away from that do you think we are?
I think there's going to be a few lone voices like a Thomas Massie. I mean, they're getting smaller and smaller. I mean, MTG, for all of her original kind of faults of, I think she left with her eyes wide open, and that sucks. Cause it's like, that's the person you want in DC. We need more Thomas Massies.
I know. I was hoping that, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie would run on the same ticket, because I would have campaigned for them. You know?
Oh yeah. I'd go door to door for that ticket. But so I think but the swamp, as a whole, they are still benefiting so much from status quo.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Trump ramping up the Pentagon budget is just going to make billionaires into trillionaires when it comes to weapons in the, you know, the military industrial complex. So I don't think we're going to get any voices or any loud voices in DC. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe some of the states, maybe, if we got a good governor in a good state, you know, maybe a New Hampshire, I think Texas, you know, is an unknown, but there are some, you know, I think there's a guy running in Florida, and a guy that's actually running against Vivek in Ohio that are both, they were like, I'm going to be America first, America only. We're not taking any money from AIPAC. We are going to reverse all the damage that these, you know, Republicans have done to our states. If we can get, you know, if America Firsters could get a governor elected in a state that just immediately, you know, because we have all the speech laws. I mean, Florida passed, you know, anti-speech laws that you can be criminally prosecuted for saying anything negative against Israel. Like, that's the kind of stuff that people are sick of. Mm-hmm. And if you got a good state in a good legislature that was like, no, we're going to be America first, and you get a huge right turn for authoritarianism in DC, and then a state says we're out, like, that's I've ranted on this multiple times, but national divorce, I think, is our only peaceful way to end the empire.
Yeah.
And as much as Trump wants to continue to, you know, steal countries and force them under our umbrella, so to speak, if the empire breaks up internally, peacefully, like how the Soviet Union and Soviet bloc dissolved, then the empire crumbles and we can avoid war. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think if you have a good state, I mean, maybe it's a California, and Trump goes, takes a hard right. I mean, Tim Walz was talking about the National Guard coming out and kicking out ICE out of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Minnesota.
Minnesota. One of those cold states. that's where it's like, you know, if we get to that point where even if a leftist state says we're out, and things crumble pretty quickly at that point, I think.
Yeah, I think it takes one to give the others permission, like, hey, we can do this, you know? And then, yeah, I think others will follow. So, the dissolvement of the United States might be the only thing that saves us. That does sound like such a black pill, but man, it would be way better, you know, if we split into 50 different countries than one massive one. Cause look at what we've done as one massive country. We're trying to take over half the world.
I mean, cause that ends the empire. All the troops have to come home at that point. You know, we abandon all of the bases. Mm-hmm. All the troops come back to their states. The states come, you know, enforce their own militias, or some states would probably group up and, you know, form commonwealths.
Mm-hmm.
We would kind of dissolve into a more of a, how the original framers of the Constitution envisioned us, like 50 sovereign states. And we're supposed to just have a loose affiliation and not an empire. And so I like the idea of that. I mean, then all of a sudden the debt would be defaulted on because there would be no federal government. So federal debt would just have to Federal Reserve, you're gone. And, you know, sorry, everybody who holds our debt, but you know, the states would have to decide whether they're going to accept their portion of that debt, or whether they're just going to say, sorry, anybody who has treasury bills and bonds, they're worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they get transferred over to a state currency. I mean, that's the reset that we need. And, mm-hmm. And it could be done peacefully. But the problem is there's a lot of people that would lose power, centralized control, huge contracts. But that's federalism. That's the benefit of federalism. You can't control everything if there's 50 individual sovereign states. Then you have to go to all 50. And it's a lot harder to, and that's, again, that's the brilliance of it. And then that, you know, it comes back to local representation. You know, all of a sudden your state matters. And that's where I think we need to be focused on is how is, what's affecting me and not what's always happening in DC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what do you say? Let's wrap this up. You know, it's always good to be back recording, to the listeners. If you guys have stuck with us this far, we really appreciate it. You know, this is a fun thing. As dark and sort of depressing as this episode was, you know, it's always great for me to be able to talk to a friend about, you know, all this stuff. 'Cause I try to talk to my family about it. They look like they want to kill themselves. So, so anyway, yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us. You know, like, subscribe, do all this stuff. Check out the bottom of the screen. We got all of our socials here. You can find me on X, Andy_Koons. You can find me on TikTok at Andy Koons. That's KOONS. Where can people find you, Ben?
Instagram and X are probably my two biggest platforms. Both of you, but them, you can find me under Picture This 1979. Help me get blocked by somebody else famous on X. So that's always fun.
Yeah. I need to be able to put more names on my mantle than just Phil Labonte, you know? So, I'd like to be blocked by, you know what? I want to get blocked by like Barack Obama, and I have tried to get blocked by him so many times, you know, I'll go onto his tweets and just say the most vicious things I can think of. And the son of a gun won't freaking block me. Anyway. All right, guys. Thank you so much. I think we should try this again next week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know our work schedules can be conflicting. And so that's why and obviously we both have families. So that's part of the reasons why we haven't been as regular as we'd like to be. But yeah, we definitely this is kind of a therapy session, you know, to your point.
Like, yeah.
It's just nice to have some, you know, somebody to kind of unload on.
Yeah,
that sounded improper. But like, you know, it's
no, unload all over me, Ben.
you've been unloaded on. It's good for the soul just to have, you know, somebody to talk out some of these ideas, and you mm-hmm. know, I always feel better at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
And welcome to 2026, everybody.
Yeah, happy new year.
Still looking for flying cars, but I.
You know, we got jetpacks. Like, jetpacks are a thing, you know? That happened and nobody was, like, you know, dancing in the streets or anything. I had, like, ever since I played Duke Nukem 3D whenever I was a kid, I was like, I cannot wait for jetpacks. And then jetpacks just happened, like, and it happened a couple years ago, you know? Anyway, I could talk about jetpacks for another hour. That's my autism coming out. Anyway... guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for stopping by. Like, subscribe, share this, tell your friends about us. Ben, tell your friends that Ben and I are extremely attractive and very funny. And yeah, see you next time.
Peace.